The committee meeting will come to order for Cultural and Outdoor Resources Committee at 4:35, because the previous committee did not leave until 4:28. Assignment 6, process goals and the tally sheet and project goals was due, the assignment 6 was due at 4 o'clock last Thursday. Some people, and more, a greater percentage from the audience people, did not meet the requirements to turn their assignments in. And it's still not too late. We really would appreciate them. In your packet is a green sheet, or on the table is a green sheet with the results of the small group from the other day. And goal 1, use existing funding systems, state agencies and entities to distribute the funds rather than creating new bureaucracy. Goal 2, there was a tie of several, but they fit, and it fits with what the second assignment had, and your reading assignment on goals and indicators were, have a larger percentage of public that will engage in the maintenance, use, and enjoyment of our cultural and outdoor resources. Have a blank year plan for each account based on current science, public engagement, completed in reasonable amounts of time. Prevent and restore impaired waters. Every Minnesotan will have access to arts and cultural activities, arts education activities, clean water, outdoor recreation including hunting and fishing, and public radio and television signals. Goal 3, meet the constitutional requirements, that is, supplement and supplant. Equity with geographical and demographic. First statewide needs assessment. Fund statewide priorities. Measure level of success in achieving equity. Use money to fund clean water legacy. Test results show clean water quality. Goal 4. Enhance cooperation among stakeholders, organized and unorganized. Balance within each account. Improve drinking water quality. Broaden access and opportunity to safe parks and trails, including regional and local. Prioritize projects that create jobs and leverage non-state money. Goal 5. Contributes to economic health of the region and the state. Legislation for accountability. Website. Office of Legislative Auditor. Restoration Audit. Increase access to the arts for all Minnesotans. Minimize barriers, economic, demographic, cultural, and geographic. To assist access to the arts for all Minnesotans. Number of participants in art activities should increase. Measurable evidence of arts funding in all Minnesota counties. If you think that any of these should be tweaked in any way. Talk among yourselves and figure out how, and submit that at a sometime this week. But this is a pretty good compilation and tally for the small group results. Now, on the
a clarifying question. Perhaps I'm misunderstanding something, but under goal two, it says every Minnesotan will have access to, including arts and cultural, and then under goal five, increase access to the arts for all Minnesotans. They look like a duplication.
Mm-hmm.
Yes?
Yes.
Okay.
And because there were duplications among the group's original list, and so that would be a good thing to point out, that we don't need two of them.
Mm-hmm.
And we can refine it more and maybe reword it a little bit. We used the language that was on the original green sheet pretty much. Mr. Chen did. Representative Loeffler.
Madam Chair, and I appreciate your offer to have us tweak if we think there are things like that, but I think it's important to note that in goal five, I think people rated that because it was the minimizing the barriers, the economic, geographic, demographic, and cultural barriers, which is a different thing than everyone has access. If you can't afford it, or it's too far to drive, or something like that, that might be a barrier, even though they're dispersed. So that I think that's why we're separated.
I think you have to think about these and ponder them some before we go any further with them, but I think this is a pretty good job, and we can just make it a little bit better and permanent for 3 weeks' worth. Last week we talked about the papers that Mr. Shepherd did for us, and we started with the supplement, supplant, or substitute, a constitutional issue. And we talked about it somewhat, and we had some discussion on it, and I think we're going to have continued discussion on it as we go along a little bit. But there were a couple of people, or a person, that said, gee, I want to talk. I wanted to talk. And I invited Jim Bazat to come and tell us what he thought as he worked on the constitutional amendment for getting it for a long, long time. And so, Mr. Bazat, will you come before us and just tell us what you told me after the meeting last week?
Madam Chair, members, thank you for the opportunity to address you this afternoon. As Chairman Murphy mentioned, I was indeed in the audience last week and listened very intently to what was being discussed. When I got home, I thought about that, and I thought that there's some things that I would like to share with you, at least give you my views. During the campaign to get the amendment on the ballot and then passed at the polls, we talked to literally thousands of Minnesotans. The number one concern that they expressed was, how is the money going to be spent? Are we going to be led up the Primrose Path once again? And our response to them was always, that's the reason that it's in the form of an amendment to the Constitution, so that these funds must be used where they were promised to be used. They also mentioned that what their number one issue is that they would like to see these funds be used for new projects. Projects that would be above and beyond the DNR's capability. One of the things that we've all known is that for years, the budget for natural resources and conservation has been woefully inadequate. Senator Lassard has said many different times that if the budget was a pie chart, the amount of money set aside for natural resources and conservation would be a sliver that would be almost imperceptible. In a state with the history of ours, this is intolerable. And it just simply cannot be allowed to continue, and the time to stop it is now. The amendment promises the voters of Minnesota where these funds would be spent. The legislature and the many groups that traverse the state promoting the amendment echoed the promise of the amendment, the legislature by putting it on the ballot and all the meetings that the groups had. They basically said that these funds will be used over and above what is normal from the DNR. Then we get into our three S words, supplement, supplant, and substitute. Now, when I look at the amendment, and to echo what Mr. Shepard recited to you last week, the dedicated money under this section must supplant traditional sources of funding, and it goes on to say may not be used as a substitute. When I read that, I don't see any ambiguity there. The meaning of those two phrases is clear to me as to how these funds should be spent. We're dealing with some very unique economic times, both within the state and nationally. And despite that, our voters went to the poll last November, and by a surprising margin, they agreed to tax themselves. With a gas tax increase, stadium tax, and others throughout the state, they still volunteered more of their hard-earned dollars. Why did they do that? Our feeling is that they did that because they care about our state. They care about the legacy that we're going to leave to future generations, and they want to see that protected and brought back to the point of national prominence that we once held. The DNR talks about the fact that the revenues are decreasing and off of licenses. Well, one of the reasons for that with duck hunters is the fact that the fall migration doesn't come through Minnesota anymore. And why is that? Well, partially it's because of the fact that we've lost so many of our wetlands that they've moved west, and those that we have left are polluted. Fishing licenses. Why should fishing license revenue be down? Well, maybe it's because of the constant DNR's warning about fish consumption in so many of our lakes. They came out with a report that said of the lakes tested, 40% have got different, varying levels of pollution. For a state like ours, that's just simply unacceptable. Traditional sources of funding. Has there ever been a less traditional source of funding than the funds generated by the amendment? These funds are freely given by our fellow voters, our fellow citizens, because of the fact that they want to see improvement in our outdoors. These funds are not business as usual. These funds simply cannot be manipulated, misaligned, or otherwise messed with. We promised that they would not. The last thing that I would like to mention is the Lassard Council. I urge this committee to have faith and trust the Lassard Council. I have sat in on several of their meetings, and what I found is a group of individuals that are very knowledgeable, very experienced, and very dedicated. They are determined to submit projects for funding to this committee that uphold the criteria as established in the amendment. And I look for this committee to help.
Thank you, Ms. Bissett. Representative Houston.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't serve on any of the committees that that were part of this discussion earlier about the amendment and the council, so all I really know is what I read in the newspaper. But you observed that we are in an unusual economic time, and that there won't be, after tomorrow's news, I suspect there won't be any part of the budget that isn't dramatically affected. And one of the things that both the federal government and the state hope we can do in years like this, when millions of people are losing their jobs, is to ask, can we do two things with money? And one is, can we figure out ways to put people back to work with both federal and state money? And what I read in the newspaper sounds as though there might be a group of citizens who would still, in a year like this, believe we should buy land, and others who say we should apply that money in such a way that people have work that comes out of it. Still reaching the goals, as understood, but that it would be more than land purchase. And I don't know if you have any particular response to that.
Representative Houston? One of the things that isn't stated in the amendment, but that we all pretty much accept, is the fact that as these projects are put underway, that they will provide a source of employment. The numbers are certainly not yet known, of course, but that we will have citizens employed in doing the projects that this committee approves. Sometimes with the forest, and I'm not nearly as well versed in that as I would like to be, but timing is an issue. We have to remember that the funds that would be used for this endeavor are over and above traditional sources of funding. That this is extra money that the citizens of Minnesota have decided to tax themselves on to accomplish these things that we're losing ground on every single year. And so, yeah, this is a tough time, and money is going to be short, and the budget forecast coming out tomorrow is undoubtedly going to be scary. But I think that is still a different issue than the dedicated funding monies are.
Thank you, Mr. Bissett. We appreciate that you came forward.
Thank you for your time.
If anyone else have any comments at this time about supplements or supplants or substitutes? Okay, keep thinking about it. Representative Wagenius, I have a question that, as I was going through Mr. Shepherd's paper, and on the Clean Water Legacy Act that was passed in 2006, we passed that without funding, and there has just been one-time funding for some parts of it, or some things, is that correct? And if that's the case, if the money has been given one time for particular purposes since, then is all the constitutional money directed to Clean Water Legacy supplementing? Your committee has talked about this a little bit. Do you have any...
Well, let me... I'd be glad to talk about this because it is an issue that I personally wrestle with. Remember that the Clean Water Legacy money is only targeted to cleaning up lakes, rivers, and streams. We have to start with that. The constitutional amendment is broader than that. It talks about protecting groundwater. It talks about prevention in general. It talks about drinking water prevention. And it talks about lakes, rivers, and streams.
So if there's like four things in the constitutional amendment, the legacy was addressing one of those issues. Okay. The legacy bill passed, and there wasn't a lot of money put into the first year, but there were two kinds of places where the money was put in. The doing a little bit of cleanup, very little, but mainly to assess, test the waters, and then after you test the waters, to get a plan of action ready. That's called the TMDL. So in the first year, which was funded with Representative Osmond's committee, there was only some money put in for that assessment and TMDL. But one of the rationales for that was you couldn't gear up fast enough to go to what was supposed to be a 10-year plan, mm-hmm. where you do 10 years, you test. That federal law says your testing is only good for 10 years. So there is a, you're supposed to test 10% of each of the waters every year. So at the end of 10 years, you'll have gotten the job done. And you can start again if you need to, which you probably will. TMDL do the same thing. As soon as you do the testing, you figure them out, then you go along with doing the TMDL. In the last budget, we did the 10% each year of assessment and the 10% each year of TMDL to put us on track to follow the law. So, we are on track. We had hearings talking about it, and the Pollution Control Agency, yes, said we're meeting the goal, and they went out and advertised a lot and said we are on track because we are on track. But now some people come back and say, well, that was only one-time money, so there is no, if we were to use the clean water money, not clean water legacy money, but the clean water money, for those two things, it would not be a substitution. I don't think that's as crystal clear as that, because we got us on the 10-year plan, and we fully funded the 10-year plan for the first 2 years. And the agency went out and said, we're getting the job done, this is the right thing to do, and we are on track. So there's a question, I think, about if we go back and say, if we use this money to do that job, is that a substitute? In my judgment, it is, actually. I've come down to thinking that it is a substitute. This is what the agency is supposed to be doing all along anyway. But there is another question that I wrestle with. Am I talking too much?
You're doing fine.
Okay. There's another question that I wrestle with.
Because we all have to wrestle with this. If you're wrestling, we're wrestling.
I didn't. When you look at the monies for habitat, what the voters did was something very generous for habitat. We have not spent at that level per year. That was very, very generous. When you look at for waters and looking at all the four categories, that's a small portion of what we need each year to take care of our waters. So it doesn't get the job done. So we have to be, in my judgment, even more careful about what we spend the money on, because there have been projections that we need triple or quadruple that money per year in order to get the job done. I mean, when I see the public facilities people are coming up, and they'll give you a number if we ask them politely what we should be spending on public facilities a year, just that, and it's an astronomical number. So if I put some of the issues on the table, I could talk more.
Something to ponder on, and these are things that we're going to be
that we can leave or that we can say within 7 minutes at a particular meeting that we're going to decide things. But we have to have a few thoughts, new thoughts every time. Representative Virginia.
Well, let me give you just another thought that is coming to my mind as I listen to this or look at the money. While we look at, while the Constitution says you're going to protect the groundwater, I look at our Pollution Control Agency right now. They have 5 staffers out of 960-some that deal with groundwater. I think Ag has 5 staffers that deal with groundwater, too. I don't know that the agency's that big. DNR doesn't have any proportionately any more staffers dealing with groundwater, so there is no plan on the table. I think maybe people didn't know we were going to have this, weren't sure if we were going to have this money. So there's no plan overall to deal with the groundwater or any big preventive plan. So I think what we have to discuss is even broader than just the legacy money.
And that plan was recommended at our joint meeting when the freshwater people made their presentation, right?
Yes.
And at that same meeting, then the clean water people made recommendations to us that with the two together was about 200% more. It cost 200% more than what we even anticipate, if I remember correctly. Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Guinness. This is really helpful for those of us who haven't worked a whole lot in the waters area and are still trying to sort out who's doing what and how and the different types of waters. Am I correct in understanding that there's probably not a prioritized list in the drinking water area as well? Or is that mixed in with these other studies and lists as well?
Representative Virginia.
I think it's safe to say that the Department of Health had not expected to see this, and when they saw the drinking water money in the Constitution, they changed the plans right away. And so they are making a proposal for some of the money. The Constitution actually doesn't say 5% for drinking water. It says at least 5%. So we could, under the Constitution, allocate more money for drinking water source protection. But do I see plans out there like that? I don't serve on the Health Committee, but I know of no plans like that, if that's the answer to your question.
Any other comments about supplements and supplants? Representative Eakin.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and this goes to the issue again of supplant versus supplement, and as far as the PMDLs and the cleaning up of the waters that are already polluted or impaired, if it is considered to be a substitution, use the dedicated funding money for that. I see it as a possibility, since this is one-time money to put it on the 10-year track, that it could conceivably fall off the 10-year track because it was one-time money, and the dedicated funding wouldn't be allowed to be going towards that goal. It's just one concern that I have about losing some of the flexibility with the money if the definition is very stringent on what substitute means. And I see it, too, with state parks where if it could be used for the acquisition of new lands for state parks but not for the maintenance of the old ones. I've even heard concerns about the possibility of funds being taken away from the old state parks to help with the new lands that are being acquired that could actually weaken the state parks that we already have. Just some concerns that I think we need to be aware of.
And that we will have to discuss all before March 30th. Any other comments about any of the other terms used in Article 11, Section 15 of the Constitution, the second paper that Mr. Shepard gave us last week? If not, keep pondering and we will go forth and we will refer back to them. Is there anyone in the audience that wishes to fulfill the assignment number 2? Ms. Adelman? Anyone else?
Madam,
well, we ignored her. She's had it, not particularly on that day, but since then she's had it, but we've ignored her.
Well, Madam Chair, no, but I'm a firstborn, and I like to follow the rules. Mm-hmm. And I was not present on the day that the majority of people did their pictures. And we're getting some audiovisual help here. This is a picture that I was the photographer. I am not in the picture. And to tell you a little bit about the date, the little girl is now almost 16. But this was a family trip to the North Shore. And it really embodies the spirit, I feel, on many, many aspects of the legacy amendment. It's on the North Shore, so obviously there's clean water. During this trip, we went to Split Rock Lighthouse and State Park. We hiked a trail. But really, overall, we went to a small museum. Overall, it's my husband teaching our daughter how to skip stones. And to me, the purpose of the legacy is what some people have talked about already today, which is the future generations. And for me, the legacy is that my daughter's daughter is going to have that same opportunity, and someone will be able to teach her how to skip stones. So it's really about being with people that you enjoy in a natural setting.
Indeed it is.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Assignment number 2? Thank you, Ms. Adelman. Mr. Coleman, Public Facilities Authority. An agency that is so vitally important.
Madam Chair, committee members, I apologize for no pictures, but I will tell you I am an underwater photographer, amongst other things, dive master, and I did spend the weekend under the ice training, working with Lafleur County Sheriff's Department, training them how to do search and recovery underwater. And if you think I don't care about clean water, try to swim in a shallow metropolitan lake with, in the wintertime with a foot of ice on you. It's nice to be able to see your buddy 5 feet away. That's the same lake, by the way, and you can see your buddy under ice in the wintertime, have visibility about 20 feet. That same lake we dove in November before the ice formed, you can barely see 2 feet. So, I am asking. If anybody wants to see pictures, I got several albums. I'll gladly bring them. Briefly, I brought a packet. Hopefully, this covers everything you want to cover, and we'll try to answer questions that don't. Our budget portion of the bill is way in back, but I'll cover the organization first. Public Facilities Authority is a multi-agency authority made up of 6 different departments. We ourselves are primarily concerned with financing the infrastructure, and we, the members of the PFA board, all represent areas that we work with or provide funds for various components. And I'll just highlight those real quick. With the Department of Agriculture, we have been providing them funding for numerous years for the Agriculture Best Management Practices Loan Program. With the Pollution Control Agency, we work in partnership with them on municipal wastewater projects. They prioritize projects, they do the environmental reviews, all the technical components, and when the project is ready to bid and they've met all the requirements under state and federal law, they certify those over to us, and then we begin to finance the project. And we have a list of programs there, the WIF program, which is very, very common. The state revolving loan fund. We have a small community wastewater treatment, which was part of the Clean Water Legacy Program, CMDL grant program, which was part of the Clean Water Legacy Bill or Act, and the phosphorus reduction. We also provide TCA funding for their loans for the Clean Water Partnership Loan Program that address a lot of the non-point source projects in a comprehensive manner. With Commissioner of Finance, I don't list here, but on the bottom in the center of the credit enhancement program, if there is any money in the general fund, it's an open appropriation in the general fund, we will pay the debt service payments of loans that we've certified from counties or cities that have defaulted on their bonds. We certified that loan at the time of issuance, and county bonds are limited to criminal justice and social service buildings. Cities, which was added, will cover clean water, stormwater, and drinking water projects with that. So far, we've never had a GO bond default. We don't plan on it, and there might not be any money in the general fund to make payments if we do. But the advantage of that is it gives cities, Moody's rates those bonds as AA and Standard & Poor's AAA, allows counties and cities to go to market and sell bonds on their own at really good rates. And there is a tremendous gap today between investment grade and credit. I think looking last week, I think the average of a 20-year bond was probably around 4.25% interest level debt for AA, AAA range, and a triple D or non-investment grade, which a lot of the municipalities in Minnesota fell at, was about 7.5%, one of the largest gaps I've seen in over the decade. So that program really does reduce interest costs. We have a small revolving loan fund with the Department of Transportation, and we also have a drinking water revolving loan program, which is our second largest program besides wastewater or clean water. And the partnership between the Department of Health is just like it is with us and the Pollution Control Agency. They set priorities, rank projects, do all the environmental work, technical reviews to make sure the plans and specs will actually address the problems, and they certify projects that's the financing. And we also contract with the Department of Employment and Economic Development to manage their community facilities programs as well, and got those listed in the gray area. Don't technically fall into the PFA, but we do supervise those staff as well. And on the next page, really looking at from a budget detail, we are a very small agency when you look at staff people. There's all the positions we have, plus we contract with TCA for roughly 10 FTEs. Cover the work they need to accomplish, certify projects over to us, and five with the Department of Health to do likewise. But kind of shows the distribution of staff. And continuing, I think there's a highlight some of the aspects of the PFA. Our mission really is to utilize the interagency authorities provide municipal finance expertise, infrastructure financing programs to enhance the environment and economic vitality of the state. I think that's our goal. I mentioned our board is made up of six commissioners. The PFA manages funds and investments for three revolving loan funds, drinking water, clean water, and transportation, and have a variety of other programs that I've touched on briefly. Just about everything we do, we partner with another agency, so that's why we have a very fairly small staff. And with that, we also have authority to sell bonds. We're the third largest state issuer of bonds. We have about $1 billion worth of bonds outstanding. Obviously, the state of Minnesota is the largest issuer. Housing Finance Agency is the second largest, and then us. Currently, our outstanding bonds are a little over $1.1 billion, almost $1 billion after today's payments to bondholders. And we currently have assets of about $2 billion when you look at our loan portfolio and cash and investments and debt service reserves. So that's kind of the highlight. And get into our infrastructure financing programs and more related to this committee's interest in clean water as well as our overall budget as the PFA. But we have two base programs that we consider and have had for many, many years to address wastewater infrastructure in the state of Minnesota. We've got the Clean Water Revolving Fund. We provide low interest loans. We've been doing it since 1989. Through last fiscal year, we've made 339 loans for $1.9 billion. Interest savings to municipalities, and we calculate that fairly conservatively, assuming every city can sell AAA-rated bonds. We just use AAA-rated scale at the time we make loans, assuming that's what cities can sell at. And interest savings over $466 million. In 2009, we financed 17 projects. Average interest rate on our loans, 2.5%. Over 33 projects were actually funded as part of that $148 million. We are a AAA-rated issuer. I want to emphasize that. We go to the market to sell our bonds, and we've been a AAA issuer before the state of Minnesota became one. So we've have a long history in the credit markets, well-known name for credit quality. We've never sold our bonds the same day the state of Minnesota has. Sold our bonds same day as state of Maryland, which was AAA by all three rating agencies, and we actually beat their rates, and they're a higher tax state, income tax state than Minnesota is, anywhere from 5 to 15 basis points on a year-by-year maturity. So we were pretty proud of that. The Wastewater Infrastructure Fund funding program, something the legislature created years ago to help cities that can't afford the loans alone to keep projects somewhat affordable. And this is traditionally in the bonding bill we ask for the WIF dollars, and we use those in two ways. One, to match USDA Rural Development Grant, because they deal with the very small communities, and they have a loan grant program, roughly about $10 million in loans and about $6 to $8 million in grants every year. And we match their grants. We used to match on a 50-50 basis, but as their grant ratio got cut back and their loan dollars increased, we changed that 65% in state law, state money to every 35 cents in grant money that they provide. And last year, I think we did 19 projects with a total of about $12.1 million in WIF, the combination of grants and loans. Oh, I should mention too that besides USDA Rural Development, where we provide the grant on the Clean Water Revolving Loan Fund, when they hit 5% of market value as far as debt service goes, whether current or current debt plus the new debt, we provide a 0% 20-year deferred loan. So when the SRF loan is paid off, then they start repaying the WIF up to 40 years. And there is some grant language built into that formula as well for very, very high cost projects that have severe environmental impediments like granite and things like that that they have to drill or blast through to put in the system. Those are our base programs. That's what we've operated for many years. That's what we consider our standard operating procedure in most of the projects we fall into. When the Clean Water Legacy Program was created, and we looked at it, you know, where are the gaps, what needs to be addressed. Cities assume that there's a lot of unfunded mandates with looking at the TMDLs, and they wanted help there. Pollution Control Agency adopted a phosphorus standard, and they wanted some help there to enforce that and reduce lawsuits to address the phosphorus issue. And we also looked at problem addressing the very, very small communities that have straight pipes. And we're talking cities that are below the permit threshold for PCA, roughly 30 households and less. So a lot of them unincorporated, some incorporated. But we can make loans and grants to townships and counties that are willing to own and operate individual systems. And these programs were put into the total daily maximum loan program was actually passed and created the year before the Clean Water Legacy Act, but was amended in the Clean Water Legacy Act as part of that process. So really, and our budget request for Clean Water Legacy Funds in the governor's budget address these three programs. Although we have received one-time funding and bonding bills for these programs to get them going, nothing really like we felt appropriate to address the issues that were identified by various groups. And we do rank them in our priorities. We rank small community wastewater treatment program as our number one priority because there really is no other mechanism that we know of to reach out and help communities address those septic issues. And there we look at replacing the septic or creating small cluster systems versus municipal wastewater systems. And the amount of technical assistance or hands-on that's needed to help those communities understand what they need to do, and once they get it, how to own and operate and maintain those systems so that investment is protected, costs a lot of money. In the governor's base budget, we have $100,000 to continue, which is the technical assistance grants, and we're asking for another $250,000 over and above that on the Clean Water Legacy because the needs are so great. So we're not
out of the constitutional funds.
Yeah, we're not replacing the funds. We're just trying to get more out of our dollars. Whether that stays in the budget next week, I don't know, but it wasn't our intent to do any supplanting or replacing. And we have $2 million. Well, I'll get into the dollar figures later. But those are the three programs, and they weren't things we did traditionally with the base program. The full daily maximum load program is a 50% grant of that component which is required in a treatment plant to address the TMDL. So when a TMDL study is done, as the impaired water has been identified, a study on what needs to be done to eliminate that impairment so that a body of water meets the standards that body of water is supposed to meet, usually touchable or swimmable. And the pollutant loads are assigned various categories. Municipalities, because they're permitted, have 10 years to address that new standard. And this grant program provides 6% of the cost to bring that up. So if it's phosphorus or ammonia or turbidity, suspended solids, things like that, that create impairment to water, whether it's a stormwater flow or a wastewater treatment flow, this program was designed to address 6% of those costs. The phosphorus grant program was the 75% grant program up to the year 2011 to encourage cities to go ahead and start reducing phosphorus. And it dropped to a 50% grant in 2011. And that is strictly for the phosphorus treatment in a municipality, bring it down to 1 milligram per liter or less. If the TMDL requires less, it will bring it, they have to meet that standard. On the next page, our second major biggest program is the Drinking Water Revolving Loan Fund. I'll just briefly mention, since that program began, we've done over 216 loans, over $428 million worth of loans, and saved taxpayers at the local level over $86 million in fees and taxes based on the low interest loans. Again, that fund is AAA rated. I should also mention the leverage component. This is traditionally funded with bond proceeds, the state match, like our loan program. And we've leveraged for every dollar in state money we get in the bond proceeds, we've funded $9 worth of construction. So it's fairly good leverage. I forgot to mention that on the Clean Water Revolving Loan Fund, it's even higher. For every dollar we receive, we've done over $13 worth of construction. So, Transportation Revolving Loan Fund, we are going to be doing a loan cycle. We have a couple $1 million that will be available. That fund, as loans get paid and the bonds get paid off, we get a little extra revenue. We open that up. There's no fixed application, annual application cycle. It all depends on what year we actually have enough money to make it worthwhile to do a loan cycle, and then we advertise with all the district offices of MnDOT to solicit applications for those. Credit enhancement program I mentioned briefly. Those two components very useful. Turning to the next tab, the Clean Water Fund, and I just want to highlight the bar graph that kind of shows, if you can look at the loans requested, the loans awarded, the federal cap grant that we've received, that is the federal money, and then the state match for those federal funds, shows you how little we get and how much we do, I guess, but yet how much of the demand still left unmet. So just to give you a visual impression, right? Representative Wagenius mentioned earlier that the needs are very astronomical when it comes to clean water, and indeed they are. So, and this kind of demonstrates that.
I think, Mr. Coleman, we find that out every time we go on a bonding tour across the state and listen to people's wants and needs, and they're not separate. Representative Wagenius?
Yes, I have remembered doing past committees actually giving us a number, what we should be spending every year on wastewater treatment.
Yeah.
And you want to share that with us?
Well, I used to say we'd love to do about $400 million a year. It might keep up with the need, but you could probably bump that up to $600 million a year. Nowadays, if there was grant funding available, like, you know, the stimulus package supercharge, I think that was locally underfunded from giving people's expectations and the phone calls I've gotten in the last few weeks. I'm sure we could do $600 million easily. I mean, the demand is there. In the past, there was a lot of investment in the private sector. Developers paid for a lot of the subdivision, the new construction, and cities could tap that and tax those, that new growth, to pay for a lot of the replacements that they would do without using us. That just doesn't exist the last couple of years. So the demand for our funding, subsidized projects, is even greater.
If we had $600 million, would all the yellow be green?
Yes, we could turn that yellow into green if we had the money. We might need a few more staff people or PCA to process the applications, review the plans and specs, but that would be something I'm sure we could work out given the amount of work to be done. With that, I'd like Jeff to go in. Did you ask how far?
Just a minute. We have two more questions.
Oh.
Representative Erdahl?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And first of all, I guess of Mr. Shepard, if you look at the average line of the last 10 cycles of how much money we've given to PFA, would that be the traditional level? I mean, what I'm getting at is, if we took a 10-year average and then added to that, would that be supplementing or supplanting?
Mr. Shepard.
Madam Chair, Representative Erdahl, I think I'd really need to look at it more specifically, and I'm not familiar enough with these programs and what the source of funding has been and to be able to answer that right off the top of my head.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And
Erdahl.
Maybe for the future, you know, something to look at. I didn't mean to, you know, spring it on you too much here, but that might be something that we would need to consider. Also, Mr. Coleman, And you know, thank you for all the fine work that you do for the cities of the state of Minnesota. But with the have you said the stimulus money, how much you anticipate that could be applied to your program?
Yes, Madam Chair, Representative Verdal. We do anticipate the allocation of $72 million in change that we'll actually get for the Water Pollution Control Revolving Fund, half of which needs to be in the form of grants to give it out. And then 20% must be used for a variety of things. I think that people use the phrase green infrastructure, but it's anything from water conservation, energy efficiency, energy reduction, green technology. They have stormwater flow, stormwater treatment, a variety of things. So that's in there as well. We do believe we can transfer 30% of the drinking water allocation, which is $35 million, $110,000, 30% of that over to the clean water because the demand for drinking water just isn't there. I mean, we've got plenty of leveraging capacity to leverage the drinking water needs that exist that want to construct and borrow money. Or on the waste clean water side, there's still a big gap there, so we need as much as we can. So we intend to do that. When it comes to that 20% set aside, we are going to be putting out notices to all the municipalities. We're going to take applications separate, because not all those will necessarily be ranked on the project priority list. So we'll just be taking those, and we'll be looking at when they can actually bid the project. It's a timing issue, and the language for that set aside specifically exempts the priority system for those funds and wants to issue the money for those things on the readiness to get under construction, create jobs. So we want to do as much good work with clean water and reducing operation and maintenance costs, things like that, as we can with those dollars.
Representative Riddell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It seems to me over the last few times anyway that on the clean water list you get to about 40 or so projects, that right about there? If that's true, how, with the stimulus money and whatever else, what do you anticipate this year? And also with the drinking water, about where do you get on that list?
Yes.
Mr. Coleman.
On the green sheet, it's kind of PCS project priority list was in priority order, and we have drawn the cutoff at 45 points, which would be the third column there where it says PCA's 1909 project priority list points. So, and it would be on, go down to the page 3, get down to 45 points with our cutoff. Any project above that was ready to proceed this fiscal year, we told them we would fund. We plan to amend that. We're in the process of sending out public notice to drop that. The board approved to lower that down to 35 points for projects that are ready to proceed between now and July 1st. When July 1st comes around, we'll be adopting a new intended use plan, taking a look at whatever funds we have available, if there's still any stimulus money left, and determine what our capacity is to do that first. But we know there's some projects ready to go, have plans and specs that are willing to go, and they're all needed. So, we need to spend that stimulus money fairly quickly, but we're doing it. And right now I don't know where we'll be at on the cutoff of July. I've got the impression that this list represents about two-thirds of the municipal needs out there, and the other third they've never really pushed, but as soon as someone mentioned 50% grants, there's an assumption that they'll get 50% grants. And I tell people when they call me, I said, well, if we give it out equally, everybody will get 2 cents on the dollar. We don't plan on doing that. But we are looking at a base grant of about 5% for everybody because of the requirements that they have to address with stimulus money, and then also look at affordability factors, very much like we do with the wastewater infrastructure funding program. And then on the drinking water, we have a disadvantaged community grant that EPA actually allows us to make grants with the drinking water program. We're going to adopt that standard too, with 1.4% of median household income for operation, maintenance, and debt service, and then provide 80% funding over and above that amount as a grant for principal forgiveness. So that's kind of the status. But I was asked to present how projects get ranked, and I was going to let Jeff do that.
But this Representative Loeffler still has a question first.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Mr. Coleman. I'm still trying to get the big picture. And how much of this is for replacing aging, outdated, you know, bad science infrastructure versus how much is for to enable communities to expand, attract different types of businesses, create new residential developments? Is there kind of, and how does the rating system, which we're going to get into now, kind of trade those things off?
Yeah. Well, I'll let Jeff explain it, but almost every project we're funding is replacing aging and old infrastructure in addition to adding capacity, although not all of them are adding some capacity. But the wastewater infrastructure in the state is so, you know, I listened to in the Senate, we just had a hearing before I came here on the city of Grand Rapids, which has a 40-year-old system, still needing permits, but they need to obviously change that, and they want to relocate because of the odor controls and things like that. But it's a combination of everything.
Representative Virginia.
Thank you. This might be a good, as we're listening to the big picture issue, we're talking about 40-year-old wastewater treatment systems that need upgrading, but we're also designing on based on a 40-year-old law, the Clean Water Act is 40 years old, and so we're looking at pollutants we'd understood in the 1970s. So these systems aren't designed yet because the pollution control has not updated the standards, not these guys. They haven't upgraded their standards to meet emerging, not emerging issues, they've emerged. They don't regulate things like endocrine disruptors. And wastewater treatment systems, we put those into our waters, and you all have seen what birth control pills do to girly, how they make girly fish. I mean, we've had that discussion. But we...
Yeah.
Yeah,
we
yeah,
talked about that,
Madam
Chair.
In the meeting that, the joint committee meeting that we had.
Well, you have a lot of catching up to do. Anyway, our wastewater treatment systems are at this standard, including our waters. And one of the things that some of us are starting to have discussions about are these systems that we're putting on the ground now able to be upgraded pretty easily when we get better standards. And that's a question I still don't have. I still don't feel comfortable with, because I know we'll go ahead and put some of these old systems, you know, new systems with old standards in. So that is a concern that I have, a big concern I have, because I don't want us to spend a lot of money for 1970 standards. The other issue, and maybe you all have had some more discussion about this, is that we don't give any incentives here for people doing better than the current standards. And maybe that would be a good idea, because phosphorus is a huge problem no matter where. And we do it per gallon, but we do have limits on it. But still, should we, and I've asked this question, never gotten a good answer from it, should we provide some incentives for communities to say, we want to do better? So those are just issues I put on the table that I think are things that we're going to have to discuss as we go forward.
Mr. Freeman.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Tell us Jeff how we get points.
I'm Jeff Freeman, Deputy Director of the PFA, and I was wanted to talk a little bit. The Representative Wagenius earlier had the question about how much could we do or how much do we need to do, and Terry talked about how, you know, we're getting now $400 million a year in requests. If we were to add to that all of the sewer infrastructure work being needing to be done, it could go up as high as $600 million. Obviously, that's not going to happen. And so that gets into how are priorities set for the money that the state provides to assist municipalities with these costs. And you've got the green sheets which show the MPCA project rank and then points, which go together. The more points you have, the higher the rank. PCA scores projects based on, in their rules, they have a point system that is primarily based on environmental need factors. And you've got somewhere in your packet, a single sheet that looks like this, says PCL scoring summary, two-sided. I will not get into the details. If you've got more detailed questions, there's staff here from PCA, but just briefly to kind of go through this, starting with the side where the first column says existing wastewater permit. These are the factors that are used to rank projects for cities that already have an existing system that is either old, aging and needs some major rehab, needs improvements, needs to be upgraded to meet new standards, needs to be expanded to meet growth needs. That's what this set of factors are. So you can see that there are point factors for in kind of the environmental or human health threat, 0 to 60 points. You can see there age and condition. As the project ages or a system ages past 20 years, or its capacity or the actual flows exceed 85% of the system's capacity, there's additional points for those kind of things. Standards that are more stringent than when the system was first designed, there's additional points. And then in the lower section of the page, existing or proposed discharge, points are assigned based on where the discharge is going and what the water classification or the sensitivity of that receiving water. So that briefly, that's how points are assigned for existing projects. And if you look down the green sheet, the column that says project description, you can see a lot of systems that talk about rehab or improvements. Those are all improvements to existing systems. The other big category you see as you look down that column where it says unsewered, those are communities, you use the word kind of generally, that are currently have individual private septic systems, non-complying systems in some way, that have been, if they're ranked this high on the list, that means they have what PCA categorizes as imminent health threat, essentially raw sewage that's going to a ditch, going to a surface water, pooling on the ground in some way, shape, or form.
Or recycled too fast with private water.
And you can see on the back side of this white sheet, the top section is the point categories for systems in unsewered areas, and it's the first one, again, the environmental or human health threat, the highest points go to those imminent health threat. The medium category goes to when the system is not able or to protect groundwater, there's not enough separation to the depth of groundwater. And then finally, the lowest category, but still considered non-compliant, that the system does not meet various setback requirements and lot size requirements. You can see there's some other factors there, particularly the density factor. Obviously, the smaller the area, then the more number of systems you have in a small area that are non-complying or failing, that raises the priority of the project. So the points that you see there is the total of the points in these various categories. Bottom category, stormwater projects, there aren't too many of those right now. We do expect there will be more in the future, particularly as the PMDL process ramps up. A number of those PMDL studies will be focusing directly on stormwater discharges and the impacts to impaired waters, but we do expect to see more stormwater projects in the future.
Representative Houseman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just heard a new term about a week ago that apparently some state agencies have. I don't think it's yours, but it seems to me it was like CCA or something. And the term was terminal cities, meaning these are cities on their way out. They're dying. And I wondered if one can assume that on some of your cities with one point, that you have some terminal cities.
Mr. Representative Houseman, there may be some terminal cities, but the one point isn't necessarily who they are. The one point essentially means projects where there's been a need identified, but they haven't yet, or at least when this list was prepared, which PCA did this 2009 PPL last summer, June, and at that time, the data to do the scoring, the full scoring of the project, hadn't been submitted, wasn't available, and so in that case, the project is put on with just one point, kind of a placeholder, and as that data comes in, presumably a lot of those one-point cities, the next time the list is done for 2010, those will be scored with additional points.
And Madam Chair, just to follow up, I assumed that probably wasn't the case, but as I looked at your point definition, it looks as though you don't have as a standard, this city is not going to be around very long. I don't see that anywhere.
No. Madam Chair, Representative Hausman, let me respond to that.
Mr. Coleman.
There indeed may be many cities that disappear and go unincorporated in the future. Rural economy is, give us the last 50, 60 years, has diminished drastically. And those cities that are really, you know, aging, where most of the residents are elderly and there's no influx in the homes once the people leave, are vacant and remain vacant. I've seen those communities. I haven't ever seen them come in for public improvement. They just, yeah. I'll leave it at that.
If Mr. Freeman, would there be as many cities with one point, if there were more than five people working on it at PCA?
Madam Chair, I think it's not so much the people at PCA, it's the communities and the consultants or other organizations that help the communities get the information together. For the most part, the fact is that they haven't yet gotten that information submitted to PCA rather than...
Madam Chair, to be
Mr. Coleman.
Fairly candid on scoring it, PCA has the forms on their website for cities and consultants to download, and it's a self-scoring system. So once you plug in the data and submit those forms, all PCA does is really verify indeed, is that correct? So the process of getting points is relatively fast, turnaround, and quick.
Oh, and you give yourself Good point.
Yeah. So it's more of a verification process to make sure we're not being sold so good, but it's relatively quick.
Okay.
Compared to the old days.
Well, that's good to know.
I could mention one other thing to the Tuesday's priority list. This really took into account a lot of legislative initiatives 5-6 years ago and asking the agency to look at issues that you all felt they weren't looking at. And they're fairly sensitive to those issues. They spent 3 years, series of public hearings and drafting this to accommodate legislative concerns. So
it's like they had listening sessions and they listened and
provided
things.
Some advice and they listened.
It's good.
It does happen, Kate.
Madam Chair, just to complete the green sheet, you can see the various programs and dollars listed in the programs, and the PFA program kind of in the middle group there. The base programs that Terry reviewed before, the Clean Water Revolving Fund. All of these projects on the list are eligible for Clean Water Revolving Fund loans. The ones with dollar amounts in that column are projects that for 2009 applied to be put on our intended use plan for 2009. So those are the requested loans for 2009 above the 45-point cutoff that Terry mentioned. The WIF column, you can see a number of projects listed with the word reserved. Those are projects that, under the statute, once they either submit plans and specs to PCA or getting a funding commitment from USDA Rural Development, we essentially, from funds already appropriated, we reserve those funds for that community, which allows them to make that investment in plans and specs and know that once they get all the approvals, they'll have the funds there to go to construction. TMDL grants, similarly, there's in statute, there's a process for when money is appropriated, we take applications and reserve money in priority order, and cities then have that to the end of the fiscal year to get their projects under construction. We don't actually award funds to a community until they've received all the approvals and taken bids, so submitted as bid costs to us, and at that point we would make the funding awards. And then we coordinate with a lot of other funders, and you can see those to the right. So we are working with other agencies to try to figure out which programs are the best fit for a community, and in a lot of cases, how can we package different programs together to help the community build a project.
And to that extent, Madam Chair, I'd just like to note that Minnesota is probably one of the few states that do this. So we've gotten commitments from USDA Rural Development, as well as the small cities at Deed, which I now manage, to follow the priority list. Now they have different criteria and what they can, I mean, objectives and what they have to address. When it comes to wastewater and drinking water, they'll go down our priority list and provide money to those projects that meet their criteria and need assistance. But they tend to look more at the gap financing, those projects that really need grant funds to go. So there's one of the few states that do that, and it's worked out very well. I think several others have followed Minnesota's lead with trying to coordinate with USDA Rural Development. We're the very first state to provide matching grants to USDA. That netted about two projects a year or more funding from the national pool. So other states started seeing that, and so we've been copied by several others, but not many. With that, Madam Chair, I'll get into drinking water a little bit, and you see the yellow lines and green lines aren't quite as bold and high in the columns. And to be quite, the last time we sold bonds for the drinking water program was in 2005. We may be selling bonds late this year, but we might not. The stimulus package provided some additional funds. So depending on how the demand comes out there, In that program, we eliminated the cutoff line completely. We fund everybody that meets the minimum standard of a need to improve their drinking water system because we have the funds available. When it comes to drinking water, we're much better off than a lot of states, especially southern states and western states where water is real scarce. Southern states where investment historically has never been made. I've heard stories where whole towns are hooked up to few scattered wells and houses are hooked up with garden hoses for their water system from one house to the next. So they don't quite meet Minnesota standards for good water, put it that way. So anyway, it's still the demand out there. I think we do a very good job. The needs list.
And they get their drinking water from the garden hose?
Yeah, I've seen communities like that. My counterpart in Arizona said that was his first solution. He drove a pickup truck with a bunch of garden hoses. They would hook up houses that had really, really bad water with the house that had good water, and they'd have 5, 6, 7 homes on one private well. So at least it was safe to drink.
No problem.
So I'll go into that, and then behind the last tab, you'll get into our legislative initiative, which is kind of what we're here. We always ask for money. And the governor's request for the Clean Water Legacy is in there, the small community program for $2,875,000. Total daily maximum load grant program, $15 million. And the phosphorus reduction grant program, $7.5 million. I think we kind of covered those. But, and on the following page, the kind of where funds have been in the past, the number of projects we funded, and what we anticipate doing with the new money. That's kind of my request.
Any questions? Representative Virginia.
Oh, this is the governor's supplemental budget. That doesn't count the $100,000 that is in the base budget for the TMDL, for the Small Community Technical Assistance Grant. That's still in the base budget.
Representative Virginia.
Thank you. I am looking at your request for money, and you say your expected outcomes on this, your legislative initiatives on one page and expected outcomes. I see the expected expenditures, but I don't, and perhaps under the phosphorus reduction grant program I can see an outcome, but I don't see outcome for the TMDL. Can we expect to see those so that when we actually, if we were to fund this right legislation, could we have environmental outcomes?
Yes, Madam Chair, Representative.
Mr. Coleman.
On the TMDL grant program, the outcome will be that the city will meet that standard which the TMDL study and allocation plan requires the city to comply with. So the reduction in ammonia or solids or BOD or whatever the TMDL study says the municipal wastewater treatment plant has to do over and above their current permit, that's what we'll fund. So it will address the TMDL allocation. We'll clean that specific body of water up so it's fishable and drinking water, no, but it'll reduce the pollutants that permitted system contributes to it. There's still a lot of, most of the TMDLs that have done, there's a lot of private parties involved that have to be addressed. And they tend to get motivated by 75 to 100% grant funding to get them to change their behavior because they're not regulated or controlled or permitted like they are in municipal wastewater. So it's, bigger picture, if you're looking for the cleaning up Minnesota River. I mean, it's, no, but we'll get rid of the fecal coliform that's coming from municipalities. We'll get rid of a lot of pollutants that are currently being discharged with stormwater, point-to-point source stormwater, wastewater systems, and vice versa. I mean, along with all the other CMDLs that are being done once those studies allocate pollutants. So this program is strictly designed to address that treatment over and above what they normally would expect to do to maintain their current permit.
Madam Chair,
does that answer your question?
Can I just add that it doesn't get to fishable
swimmable waters, but it's a step in the right direction.
But of course,
Mr. Freeman,
the whole purpose of the TMDL process is to look at a particular impaired water, determine what are the various sources, the pollutants of concern, and the various sources of those pollutants that are causing the impairment, and then come up with a shared plan where cities, landowners, industries, all the various parties that play a role in those pollutants getting into the water, everybody has to do their part, and the PCA part of the whole process, of course, is they come back and do their follow-up monitoring as these projects are being implemented, both on the point source side and the non-point side, and with the intent of looking at has the water been cleaned up, has the water quality been improved, and that's the 10-year cycle that Representative Wagenius referred to. So this program will allow the cities that have been identified through that process to do their part, which when they're being asked to go over and above what the existing permit requires them to do.
I'm sure if I could add what Mr. Jeff said too. We're probably the only agency, or at least the first one, that changed the priority system for funding along with the PCA to address TMDL. We modified the whole priority system to include TMDL points from existing permitting. But to address TMDL, it's going to require a lot of programs. I think you'll be hearing from them or have heard from them, whether it's, you know, Board of Water and Soil, the Department of Agriculture, to address feedlots and egg runoff, a variety of programs, and they're all, yeah, the need is great. So
Representative Wagenius.
I think that the concern I have is we can do all of these cleaning up of these certain pollutants that we've identified, and the biology of the water might still not be good enough to support life. I mean, it supports the regular stuff that's supposed to be there. So I don't think we've quite moved. I mean, I think citizens expect that when you do these kinds of things, the water will be just like it was when Grandpa was there. And I'm troubled by our putting out expectations that we are not going to be meeting, I don't think. So we have to have an honest conversation with Minnesotans about what's really going on here.
Madam Chair, if I can just
add a comment.
Anecdotal story. I grew up in Slayton, Minnesota. My uncle, who I'm named after, Terry, bought an island during the Depression on Lake Chautauqua, directly across from the state park, the island you see on Lake Chautauqua. He owned that entire island he bought for $50 in 1932 and donated almost all of it to various religious organizations. When my dad moved to Slayton, Minnesota back in the 1930s, Lake Chautauqua was 80 feet deep. When I first started swimming in that lake in the early 50s, it was 40 foot deep. When I graduated from high school, the deepest spot in that lake was 10 foot deep. And that fall, before I started college, I remember sitting on a dock at a friend's cabin, and we'd throw rocks out on the lake and see how high we could count before the rock disappeared, because the algae was so thick. It's coming that lake, you literally count up to 30, 40 real fast before the rock would disappear. Water, I mean, you're never going to turn that back to where it was back at 1930 because you'd have to dredge it and start over, and I don't think we can afford to do that. However, the smell was so bad, no one ever went to Lake Chetek after July if you were smart. And I noticed a few years ago when my wife and I decided to go back and visit some family, we rented a camp spot at Lake Chetek, and we canoed that entire lake in late August. I had forgotten about the smell and didn't realize how bad that lake got after July and never went out there. And it was very pleasant. I canoed the entire lake shore, plus the two islands, and the water was fairly good to the standard of, you know, it was, you know, back in the 30s, no, but people actually can catch walleyes. When I was growing up, the best you could catch was maybe a few bullheads and occasionally carp, and that was all that lake supported. So things are improving, but there's a ways to go. But I agree, some things are going to be very difficult, like Minnesota River. It's more than just, you know, it's the river itself where it's rested, and it's plus years of silt sedimentation. The water flow from western Minnesota was very steep, rapid inflow. If we can't slow that water down, it's always going to take soil and sediment and pollute. Even if it isn't nasty chemicals, there's still going to be soils that kill that biological life on the bottom of the lake if it gets washed away. So there's lots of work to be done. Lots of work has been done. And we're seeing the difference.
So, Mr. Coleman, you can go home again?
I can canoe Lake Chetek, and my nose is not bothered. It's actually a pleasant lake.
All right. Any other questions about the agency? The agency request.
I appreciate your consideration when you make decisions.
Okay.
Sounds like a tough...
So, did you look over the bill that we have on the agenda?
I've had my staff write me up brief little bullets on every one in case I get asked questions.
All right.
If you give me a second, I'll grab my list if you want me to go through them real quick.
That's okay. There's a couple people here that want to go through. And Representative Davis?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Mr. Coleman. I've got a question on process here. If we have a bill in for a project that is high upon your list already on the green sheet, do we need the bill? I mean, the way it sounds, those will be funded. Should we just, like, pull that bill back? Because, back home will take full credit for securing the project.
Madam Chair, Representative David, some of these projects have bills because they want the states to give them grant money for the project. And we will provide loans first, and when they hit that affordability criteria, it triggers various programs, whether it's WIF or any of the others, including the stimulus money, will provide the grant based on the standard that's been accepted for several years. So we will, if they're high in the priority, I would say we're going to fund them. They might, like I say, like to see 100% grant versus...
But they still have to get to Representative... They have to get from here to Finance to Representative Hausman's committee. Because you're going to fund them through the bonding money, right?
Yeah, most of these projects were already on our list. Right. We will fund with funds we already have. So it's not like we need bond proceeds. If there are some of those projects, not all are on our list, that really aren't going to proceed unless they can get 100% grant funding, and it's just asking for money. Then.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll have my people talk to his people.
So I'll gladly talk to individual projects with individual members.
Okay. Okay. Representative Ryder? House File 278.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Please. 60 seconds.
Madam Chair, committee members, I don't know, Madam Chair, if someone needs to move it since you're planning to send them on.
I move, no, we're going to include them all.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, members, House File 278 addresses some hoped for bonding dollars to help with the sanitary sewer overflow holding tank in the city of Duluth. Some of you with longer memories than I have know that we've been working on this project for a little bit. We need several of them. They're the last line of defense in the city of Duluth between Ross Sewage and Lake Superior. And we've built three of them so far. This is in partnership with another tank that we built part of, but the geology didn't let us build one that's large enough. And again, some of you, I know Madam Chair knows, but some of you know that the city of Duluth is under a mandate from the EPA and the MPCA to stop all overflows 100% by the year 2012, or a consent decree will go into effect, which means no new additional hookups for the city to the sewer system, which means no new houses and no new businesses.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Any opposition? Thank you. Representative Rukavina is on here three times for House File 615-640-683. 615 is dealing with a project in Aurora. 640 is Town of White Sewer Project. And 683, Mountain Iron Wastewater. Are all those in compliance with the rules, Mr. Coleman? They have numbers, points.
Madam Chair, the City of Aurora's project is currently not on our list. I understand they're going to get on it along with the City of White. However, we are also working with other funding agencies to see if they can address them as well. And they may be ready to go with our program from July 1st. When we adopt a new intended use plan, depending on how they rank, at least for Aurora and White. And then I don't think anybody disputes the need there. They just haven't gotten in the process. And we did fund Aurora a few years ago. They had some issues there with an explosion of methane gas, and they are fairly heavily in debt, so they're going to. Yeah, we'll probably be looking at some grant funding to get their project going.
Okay.
Kind of where they're at.
Representative David?
Thank you. Do you want me to go up there? Is here okay? Or?
Here's fine.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. House File, I'd move House File 942. That's the City of Palm. That's the one I was questioning that's already quite high on the list on the green sheet. So I will set up a meeting with them to see how that's.
Let's send it on anyway.
Yeah, that'd be great. So I move 942, and then 944 is to do a Crescent. They need to expand their wastewater treatment system. They're right on the Mississippi River, basically right there. So there's some concerns there. And then the one for Peterson, that's an aging system there. Small town, about 225 people. And so they need some help. They don't have the capacity really to come up with that kind of money. So I move those. Do you want to do them one at a time?
We're going to do them all together.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yep. Representative Mr. Coleman, Representative. I think you're on for all the rest now. Representative Conan has 3 on the back side, 228 Montevideo.
Real quickly, Montevideo is ready to go. They've bids actually came in about $4 million less than anticipated, which is good. They are going to qualify for some stimulus money. And we'll lend them the rest. They are a fairly high priority project. They're ready to go.
Good. House file 229, Olivia.
Olivia, we have not heard from. Unless they're just starting to get on the project priority list, they're not currently ranked. That's a stormwater project affecting the school district. Is it something you might want to consider? I don't think it's going to rank on our wastewater list, but I think it has more to do with flooding than it does water quality issues.
Mm-hmm. 532 Renville.
Renville is currently ranked 44 on a list with 66 points. It's in the fundable range. $6.4 million, fairly expensive. Again, if they're ready to go, we should be able to help them out with stimulus. But they need to be ready to go.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Anselk has. Fun.
On Renville, too, I just noticed, because you know, they are in a TMDL district, and out of that $6-point-something-million-dollar project, about $1.5 million is to address TMDL issues. So that would be a project that also could be assisted with Clean Water Legacy funding, as well as phosphorus removal.
Okay, Representative Anselk has 189 Big Fork.
It's currently just 1 point on our list, so they haven't really been ranked. We know it's there's a need there to rehab that facility. It's fairly old. So my staff's been in contact with them trying to get them on the list. Let them know how to do that. Hopefully they'll be ready to go in July.
Alright. House file 190, Coleraine Bovee Taconite.
Oh.
I don't even know what that is. Aerobic digester.
Yeah. Bovee is kind of under our radar.
Aerobic?
31 points for their collection. And I'll take that back. The three combinations together are ranked 43 on PCA's list with 66 points. So they are definitely in the fundable range. If they're ready to go, we'll fund them. It's another project the Corps of Engineers is also looking at. And depending on the funds that they get from Minnesota out of the stimulus bill, and that allocation won't be known for a few weeks yet. That's one of the projects they'd like to assist as well.
House file 205, Nashua.
Nashua has a couple different projects. One's ranked 43 and one's 28. Again, they've applied to the Corps of Engineers. They're not currently on our PTL, but again, we've been in contact with them. It kind of depends whether or not who's going to fund them, at least on one of the projects.
House file 243, Bovee.
The city of Bovee, that's the wastewater project, it only has 31 points, so it's below our cutoff. And is another project.
And then
project
the 262 is the 28.1.
Pardon, Madam Chair, could you...
House File 262 ends up. Nashwalk, that is that the 28-point project?
I believe so.
Okay. So that doesn't have enough. And the others are Representative Kilty, 182, Carlton County.
Currently, Twin Lakes Township, we really don't have any information on that one. We're kind of blank. So that's drinking water, and we've got plenty of money for that, and there's no cutoff, so as soon as they're ready to go, we can address them. There's an affordability need. We do have the disadvantaged community, which works very much like WIP, using the federal government.
House File 185, Kilty Carlton. Water and sewer utility project.
City of Carlton, another project is both drinking water and wastewater, replacing underground infrastructure. Neither one has submitted information to get them ranked yet.
House File 186, Willow River. Wastewater treatment facility.
That one I missed. I don't have. What? Oh, 40, Willow River. Okay, I'm sorry. My hearing is getting old, too. That one, we're looking at trying to get done this year with 44 points. And they're not on the IEP, but they're going to become, or they're seeking to get on the IEP in July 1st. So they've been telling people they'll be ready to go. And if they are, we'll have, hopefully have some stimulus money there. USDR Rural Development is also looking at that one as a possible project. So we're working with everybody trying to get that one.
Okay. House File 187, Hilty Barnum. Well improvement funding.
Yes. Currently ranked 12 points on the drinking water intended use plan, which is fairly significant, and anything over 7 points we'd like to see done, and over 10 I'd like to bring bottled water.
House File 188, Carlton County Water Distribution Improvements Funding.
That one is not ranked, and they're not on the known yet, but my staff has been in contact with them to see if they can get them on the list.
And then House File 1148, Big Lake Area Sanitary District.
I don't have that on my notes because we have nothing in house. The bill just said that it is a 40-point project that would be fundable, but they don't have a facility plan yet, so that means they haven't even done the preliminary engineering. It'll be a while.
I have a plan.
Okay.
His husband can tell them that. All right. There's another one on our list, House File 1262, Goodview, water treatment funding provided, but there's out of Jaskowski, but that's a...
Yes, that is a project we've funded. It had 25 points on the drinking water, which is really nasty stuff with radiochemicals and arsenic, I believe. That was one that was in the water worker bill at the federal level for like $3 or $4 million. And my reading of the stimulus bill is that the Bureau of Land Reclamation was ordered to use the money in the stimulus bill to fund the projects that were authorized under the water bill. So hopefully they'll be getting money from the federal government, which was part of the authorization bill, but money was never appropriated. So that's, they were kind of looking for help, but it is a high-scoring project. This does put them, our law puts them on the kind of the max debt capacity for drinking water, so it's high cost.
Mr. Satterberg.
Madam Chair, members, I would point out to the members that this particular request is not a bonding request. This is out of the Clean Water, the Clean Water Fund under the constitutional amendment. So, you, you probably should hold this bill in this committee because it's not a bonding request as all the others have been.
Yeah. I don't think finance would like bond proceeds going into a project that's already been funded with bond proceeds.
Yeah. But
our bond proceeds, the CFA bond proceeds.
Right, but then do we, does it lose the fund, federal funding then?
We Madam Chair, we should know in the next, I would say, 30 days whether or not they're going to get their grants from the federal government.
All right. Representative David.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Coleman, is the Goodview one on there because of the flooding of August of 07?
Yes.
Is that why their water was so bad?
So, Madam Chair, Representative David, no, that was, this was an issue. They were under orders from PCA, or not the PCA, but Department of Health to get removed. And I believe it was arsenic from their water. There might have been, it was either arsenic or radiochemical. But it was a battle for 3-4 years that the city and health had over that project, and they finally moved forward.
Okay. House File 471, Solberg, Grand Rapids Wastewater Treatment Facility.
Madam Chair, that project is getting ready to go. Again, there's a lot of interest in that project. It's fairly expensive. Another one that's a good candidate for stimulus money was 5%, $36 million project replacing a 40-year-old component of their system and adding a little capacity. They've got a lot of water users there.
All right. So these bills will be referred to the Finance Committee with the recommendation that, with the exception of 1262, with the recommendation that they be sent to capital investment. We will do that by the process desired. Thank you very much, Mr. Coleman, Mr. Freeman. Mr. Hansen, House File 18.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As an ex officio member, can I move it, or do you need someone else to move?
Representative Virginia.
House File 18 be recommended to pass because
it was heard in your committee.
Yes.
And re-referred to this committee.
That's correct. Hence the finance to be re-referred. Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, House File 18 is the result of the first recommendation of the Lafarge Outdoor Heritage Council. And one of the challenges we've had with the council is that it's a hybrid between the executive branch and the legislative branch. And what this does is it provides an operating, essentially provides an operating loan from the water resource, water recreation account to pay for the administrative expenses for the Department of Natural Resources relating to the Outdoor Heritage Fund. So this is the salary and work of Bill Becker, who's serving as the acting executive director, and various clerical staff who are helping with the minutes and preparations for the meeting, and for the office expenses, or for the per diem mileage and lodging of expenses of the council members. The first meeting was required on December 1st in the statute, so the DNR started working immediately after the election when the amendments had passed. The reason you see November 15th is that's the day of the canvassing board that certified the results of the election. So what we're doing is looking back to provide for this operating loan from water recreation account to be paid back with the proceeds from the sales tax. The sales tax will not start to be collected until July 1st. And so really we're We're trying to correct the constitutional challenges that we have by having something between the executive branch and the legislative branch. The expenses, and I apologize, Madam Chair, I don't have the most up-to-date expenses, but I do have those available that have been sent by staff and council members up through Representative Genius's committee, and the projected expenses were up to about $86,000 between November 15th and June 30th. However, we do have meetings that have to be done between now and April 1st and probably afterwards to meet the statutory charge of the requirement to set up the Outdoor Heritage Council.
And this pays for expenses for the Outdoor Heritage Council to what date?
This pays through June 30th, 2009. So this takes care of the existing fiscal year, and then would the committee will need to deal with subsequent.
Representative Davis.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Hampson. Does this, is this going to shortchange the Game and Fish Fund? Do they have the resources in there to handle this?
Mr. Hampson.
Madam Chair and Representative Davis, if you look, it's not the Game and Fish Fund, it's the Water Recreation Account, and they have they do have about 100,000 set aside under DNR authority. What we're trying to do here with this bill is to make sure we have the statutory authority where the legislature appropriates the dollars. So it would not shortchange the funds, the Water Recreation Fund, but it would make sure that they're paid back from the constitutional dollars. We started doing constitutional work on December 1st, 2008 because of statute, but the Constitution does not start having money come in on July 1st, 2009.
Well, Madam Chair and Representative Hampson, isn't the DNR required to cover these costs now?
Madam Chair and Representative Davis, the statutory language says that the DNR shall provide administrative support, but we feel that that does not provide that's not considered an appropriation where the legislature is appropriating money for that. But the administrative support is there, but there is no appropriation of dollars.
I
didn't vote for that.
And it does not oblige us to, further cost.
Madam Chair, that's correct. You will need to make the decisions for the future in the committee on what happens beyond July 1st, 2009.
So it gives us another thing to ponder, too, how these funds are going to be administered. But I think our goal one that we got today kind of addresses that somewhat. Any further discussion? Any questions? Anyone in the audience which makes comments? If not, Representative Virginius renews her motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is adopted. Representative Brown?
I move the minutes of February 25.
Any additions or corrections? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The minutes are adopted as printed. Representative Turkelson.
I was wondering what happened to the town of Effie. I see we have House File number 207 in our packet, and we did not address it.
No Effie?
No Effie.
I know nothing about Effie. Ms. Fine?
Madam Chair, the author was through that.
Thank you for that point of information.
Thank you for being so alert. Members, today on bill introductions, there was a House File 1231. which is a bill for an act that I submitted relating to state government appropriating money from dedicated funds for natural resource and cultural heritage purposes. It's a skeleton bill of which I wanted to submit for to become a vehicle in the future. And I did not have time to submit it and reach all of you before that, but I would be happy to have other names on the bill if you so desire. It just has a few, four sections and then an appropriation section for the legislative auditor. So you might want to look at it and decide if you want to become an author. It'll be the committee amendment or the committee bill for the constitutional amendment fund.
Madam Chair, I submitted today, so we'll have a number of Thursday.
Yeah, it has a number, 1231.
Oh, 1231, okay.
But you can get a copy of it after today. Okay. Any other business come before us tonight? Thank you. This meeting is adjourned.